On Tech News Today, the CIA has been trying to crack Apple for years. Plus, GigaOm has been closed. And why did Twitter buy a meerkat killer? We've got brilliant journalists from eWeek, Business Insider, and Bloomberg. So stick around. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, March 10th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 50-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And by LegalZoom. It's National Start Your Business Month at LegalZoom and the best time to create the business you've always dreamed of. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but they can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use offer code TNT in the referral box to save even more. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. I'm Mike Elgin, and joining me as co-anchor today is After Nine's content czar, Joe Panettiere. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing great, Mike. How have you been?
Great. Now, you were on the show yesterday. We covered the big Apple event. We did it on this show. We also did a special live blab of the event with Leo Laporte and Andy Anatko. And so during the live event, we did kind of our off-the-cuff reactions and what we knew before the show. And when we did this show, we had three guests on who had a lot of insights and so on. You offered your insights. I did my best. But today there's a lot more information coming out, and we have the real A-team of Apple information on MacBreak Weekly today after this show, immediately following this show at 11 a.m. Pacific. So you want to check that out if you care about the Apple announcement. That's going to be the best show on this information, because of course they have such great hosts on that show, and so you really want to tune in to that if you want to really know what's going on with the Apple announcement. Well, Joe, oh, by the way, I heard rumors that they're also going to demo Meerkat, so you want to tune in for that. All right, Joe, why don't we jump into the news? The CIA, not the NSA, the CIA, has been trying to break Apple security for years, according to an investigative piece on the Intercept website. The agency reportedly hired researchers to conduct a multi-year sustained effort, as the publication called it, to crack the security keys used to encrypt data on Apple iPhones and iPads. The report is based on top-secret documents obtained by the Intercept. Now, Joe, this is a little surprising to me simply because this sounds like the NSA's wheelhouse, not the CIA's. This is
right. Security. Right. Who's in charge here?
Exactly.
Who's really in charge here in the government? You know, and it comes, what, maybe a couple weeks after that Yahoo chief security officer confronted the NSA over all the requests for backdoors and things of that nature. So it's interesting. You got the NSA pushing Silicon Valley to put backdoors and everything. Now you got the CIA, you know, trying to climb in through basement windows and front doors. If I'm the CEO of a tech company in Silicon Valley right now, I don't know how I'm dealing with Washington at this point.
And it's surprising, I think, if they don't know about these things, which I think that we'll find that they'll claim that they don't and didn't know. I mean, this has been happening since a year before the iPhone launched in 2007. And what the CIA has been doing is having an annual meeting. This is where these documents come from, called the Jamboree, where they sort of go to a secret location and have conversations about their progress on cracking Apple security and other security things as well, but mostly Apple security. And of course, this is a moving target. Apple's always upgrading its security. And so I'm sure that's why it's been a sustained effort. But this conference was sponsored by the CIA's Information Operations Center, which, by the way, conducts covert cyber attacks. So this isn't really about this might not be about surveillance per se. This might be about taking action, direct action, against people who theoretically would be using Apple devices. And one of the alarming things about this is that they created a modified version of Apple's Xcode. And when you create an app with this fake version of Xcode, it builds backdoors into any of the apps you create. And then those backdoors enable the theft of passwords and the harvesting of messages and all the things that they want to do. So that's really an astonishing thing. What we don't know is who's been using the fake version of Xcode, how many apps have been compromised, and so on. We really don't know the outcome of this ongoing project. All we know is that they've had meetings about it. They've been talking about it. They've been, again, bragging about it. So much of this information has been a lot of bragging public, presentations internally. But still, this is a bit of a shocker, and it comes after a long, long list of somewhat similar type things. Of course, on Security Now, Steve Gibson's always talking about how great Apple encryption is for things like iMessages and so on. And again, we don't know if that is great enough or not great enough to keep the CIA out.
Yeah, you know, Mike, the other thing with this is think, let's fast forward 5 years. Say the Apple Watch, for instance, does succeed and it becomes widely deployed. It's got all these sensors on it. It's got all these software development kits, whether it's Watch Kit or now the research kit that is mainly for iPhone but may extend out to watches. It's got Health Kit. Surely the CIA is looking at all these software development platforms and looking at the watch as a sensor network that's going to be worldwide. They're going to go there next. I mean, it's just so obvious in terms of how this could unfold, but I wonder, is there anything Apple can possibly do to prevent it?
It's a good question, and it's not just Apple. Lots of smart devices have heart rate sensors. You can imagine all kinds of crazy stuff. Like you could apply the real-time heart rate of someone who's going through certain things like airport security or talking to someone. It almost becomes a lie detector, or algorithms could be applied theoretically to detect when somebody is stressed in such a way. You know, if you go to airport security, one of the things they're looking for is nervous people. This is another way to detect if somebody's nervous. Now, again, is this tinfoil hat stuff or is it not? You know, we've been surprised so many times in the last year by capabilities by the NSA, the GCHQ, and other agencies, and now including the CIA, that nobody thought was possible. And, you know, there were early in the Snowden revelations, lots of people said, well, you can't, you know, the NSA cannot crack this type of algorithm. It can't crack that kind of encrypted email communication. Nobody can say that with any certainty. We don't know what they can crack and what they can't crack. My guess is they're working on it. They have huge budgets. They operate in secret, and they could be cracking absolutely everything. We have no idea. But your point is a great one. With the wearable computing revolution, they'll be able to not only monitor our communications and our metadata and our actual data and what we say to whom and who, where we go and all the rest, but they can monitor our blood sugar and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. It's just I have to spend some time thinking about what the implications of that would be. But you're absolutely right. The next phase of mobile computing is wearable computing, and that involves biometrics in real time. We got some more news for you coming up, but first, let's talk about ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is an amazing site that will help you hire the right person fast. If you've got a small business or if you're a hiring manager, ZipRecruiter is the only way to go because it solves the main problem with hiring great people, which is that there is no one place where all the great people are. They're everywhere. And ZipRecruiter will send your job everywhere so that everyone who is qualified can find it, and then you can hire the right person fast. You can post your job to 50 plus job sites with a single click, and that includes social networks like Facebook, Google Plus, and Twitter. And you can find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post it once and watch the qualified candidates roll in. And with ZipRecruiter's premium traffic boost, you can get up to 3 times more candidates. It's essentially like a turbocharging your job search. You get premium job promotion for 30 days. You get featured listing in their daily job alerts, which is sent to 10 million job seekers, and up to 100 additional visits to your job posting. It's so fast. It's so easy. You've got to use ZipRecruiter, and it's been used by over 200,000 businesses. Right now, our listeners and viewers can try ZipRecruiter for free, plus get 30% off your first traffic boost. That traffic boost is awesome. By going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT, that's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. Hire the right person, use ZipRecruiter. Well, one of the biggest and best online tech publications, GigaOm, has been shut down. Joining us to talk about the end of GigaOm is Chris J. Primesberger, who is the editor of Features and Analysis for eWeek. Welcome to you, and welcome to the show for the first time, Chris.
Yeah, Mike, good to meet up with you too. And of course, I read your stuff on eWeek every few weeks. We appreciate your contributions also.
Thank you so much. Now, why did GigaOm close exactly?
Yeah, it's a sad story. It's a surprise to many of us because GigaOm is a very respected publication, and O'Malik himself, one of our favorites, a very humble man, very knowledgeable man, plugged in everywhere, really a hard worker, puts together amazing shows. Structure is one of the best shows there is as far as content is concerned and knowledge dissemination. I always enjoy going to see his shows. And without out there putting these shows together and publishing what he does every day, there's a big hole, I think, in our knowledge stream for IT.
So why did it close? How much do we know about the reasons for its closure?
Yeah. What he posted yesterday on the site itself was a personal note, a couple of personal notes. And on one of them, he just said, quoting, GigaOm recently became unable to pay its creditors in full at this time. As a result, the company is working with its creditors that have the rights to all the company's assets as their collateral. And all operations have ceased. So that means the website, any consulting that he's doing, and then all the shows that they put on, too. They put on about half a dozen shows a year. So it's strictly a financial thing, apparently.
Yeah. So quick question for you. I'm wondering, listen, Ohm helped me. I don't know him personally, but he did help me back in 2007 as I was co-launching a media company. And he gave me some guiding points and tips in terms of a WordPress company build out. And as we went on our journey and we also watched Ohm build out GigaOm, one question I had is I'm wondering if the site just became too big and too broad. And what I mean by that is on the one hand, their traffic was a strength. I think it was like 6.5 million unique visitors per month. But on the other hand, you look at that and you say, well, who exactly is the reader here? By appealing to everyone, are they going narrow and deep enough with specific audiences, such as a CIO or a chief data officer or a security officer? The thing with GigaOm is I just couldn't get my arms around who was the target audience in the end that they were trying to appeal to in terms of the sponsors, not the readers. I know there were plenty of readers who loved the site, but the sponsors, I think, may have found it just too broad in terms of the conversation.
Yeah, Joe, it's a really good point. You know, we're all so splintered these days. We have our special places we want to go to get certain kinds of information. The broad-based sites like GigaOm, you're right. In this day and age, this is not like Life magazine used to be years and years ago, you know, where it had a little bit of everything in that publication. He was very the coverage area was very broad, no question about that. They talked about new tech deals. They talked about tech products. They talked about thought leaders. They talked about trends. They talked about what was going to happen. But it was all the way across the consumer board and the enterprise board, and that's a lot to swallow. So you got a point there. Even though it's good content, it is spread pretty thin. I think you're right.
You know, we've used and asked on this show many GigaOm writers and journalists, some of the most brilliant people out there. Sina Brewster is one. Kevin Fitchard, Stacey Higginbottom, Matthew Ingram, for crying out loud, is a big friend of Twit. Keith Leswing, David Meyer is a fantastic interview subject. He's based in Berlin, Germany. Jeff John Roberts, brilliant writer on and reporter on government and the law. Janko Rogers, one of our favorites. Kevin Toefel is also was a GigaOm contributor. And of course, one of the things that everyone should rest assured, these are brilliant technology journalists. They're going to find themselves at new publications. And when they do, we will have them back on representing those new publications. So that's the upside of all of this, is that all of these brilliant people that we've had on in the past will continue to show up on this show. And again, one of the great strengths of this show are the brilliant interview subjects that we have on. Present company included, Chris, I want to thank you so much for coming on Tech News today. Chris J. Primesberger is at eWeek.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at EditingWiz. Thanks again for joining us.
Sure, and don't forget that J in my name. Nobody ever calls me that, but that's cool.
All right. Thanks again. All right, well, we want to hear what you think about GigaOm and the demise of GigaOm. Just send us email to twit.tv, to tnt@twit.tv is our email address. And again, we want to hear from you about your thoughts on GigaOm. Well, Twitter last month acquired a startup called Periscope for streaming video from your phone. The company's still unreleased product is being compared to the live streaming app Meerkat, which is growing fast in popularity. Joining us to talk about the implications of this acquisition is Business Insider senior correspondent Allison Chantel. Welcome to you, Allison.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
The pleasure is all ours, I can assure you. Now, what did your source tell you about the acquisition?
Well, so there were multiple sources. Everyone seems to confirm that the deal is definitely 100% done, has been for weeks. And the range for the acquisition price seems to vary. The number I'm hearing most is between $75 and $100 million. I had two people tell me it was about $100 million. I had one person say it was more than $50 million, and one other person said it was smallish. But I guess depending on who you're speaking to, it could be large or small. It's all relative, I suppose. But the deal has definitely happened. Jack Dorsey was at a dinner last night talking about it. So it's done. And it's their latest video product that has yet to be seen by the world.
Yeah, Allison, are there any clues in terms of what's unique here? There are so many video streaming products and or video chat products. And more and more, you know, I sort of wonder if they'll just be sort of consumed or embedded directly into Apple, Microsoft, and or Google types of platforms. Do you think there's anything really unique here potentially with what Periscope is up to?
Before Meerkat started blowing up on Twitter, I would have said I was a lot more skeptical, but there does seem to be some sort of viral nature and newfound love for live streaming video. I think an app like this really does belong in a platform. Like if Snapchat did something like this, I think it would be really cool. I think Twitter owning a live streaming platform is really an interesting idea. Much stronger than this company would be alone. And from people that have used it, I have not. It's in closed beta. But you can usually find someone who's used it. And the people who have say, you know, it's beautifully designed. There's a really cool, unique notification system that's apparently not very bothersome, but just lets you know exactly when the right friends are using it and things like that. So I think, you know, Twitter is hoping this might be another spinoff, hopefully as successful as Vine was. But video is certainly a hot area right now. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Facebook start doing video apps and things shortly. I think it's just kind of the way everything is trending, especially with CPMs and ad dollars favoring that.
You're absolutely right about the newfound love of live streaming. You know, Leo recommended the HTC Re, if I recall, on our review show Before You Buy, because they added the feature of streaming directly through YouTube from the camera directly. Now, of course, something like Meerkat, or presumably if they ever ship it, Periscope does something similar. And also an app called that you mentioned in your article called YouNow enables direct live streaming. This is something that I've been expecting and hoping for from Google Plus, which of course had Hangouts very early, enabling live streaming through YouTube before anybody was doing it. But you couldn't do it from a mobile device. And I always thought that was a fatal flaw. Now, all of a sudden, there's an explosion in this ability to directly stream from a mobile device. Is this horrible news for Meerkat, for example? They seem to depend 100% on Twitter, but if Twitter comes out with a direct competitor, I mean, we've seen Twitter pull the plug on other third-party apps that compete with them. What does this mean for Meerkat and, for that matter, for YouNow?
Well, I would just worry for a Meerkat. I mean, there's always the fear that when something launches with as much buzz as Meerkat had, that it'll die out rather fast. I think Elo is a good example of a company that came out strong on Twitter and everyone was talking about it, raised a few million dollars from Silicon Valley investors, and then you don't really hear about it anymore. So I think without a platform like Twitter pushing it, there might be cause to worry. YouNow, I haven't seen pop up on Twitter really at all. So I think there are users that are keeping its growth strong and alive for now. You know, people who are invested in the company say that the growth is amazing. I mean, they're a little biased, but from the charts I've seen, it looks pretty good. I think Recode did a story about it about 6 months ago. So, you know, I think it's TBD on a lot of these things, per usual with startups. But I think bandwidth is getting to a place and Wi-Fi is getting to a place where these apps can exist and they can exist and really flourish and you won't worry about dropped video calls and things like that. So I think it's kind of the prime time for it right now. It makes sense that there's a resurgence.
Hey, Allison, are there any clues in terms of what's next for Periscope? I mean, when does this go mainstream and push far beyond that beta cycle?
I think the founders are busy getting it ready to be submitted to the App Store now. And so, you know, there's the typical back and forth with Apple. They have to accept your app in and things like that, which will dictate the publish date. But I think we're probably, I don't think it'll be too long. I would say if I had to estimate about a few weeks maybe away from launch, but it's, I don't think a set date has been established.
Allison Chantel is at businessinsider.com and she has the impressive Twitter handle, impressively short, of AJS. Allison, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
A man who claimed to own half of Facebook and used fake documents to prove it is now missing. Paul Seglia's court-mandated electronic ankle bracelet was found at his home, but he was not. Bob Van Voris wrote about the curious case for Bloomberg and joins us now from the press room at the federal court in Manhattan. Welcome to you.
Hi, glad to be here.
Now, before we get into the news, let's talk about history. What was Seglia accused of exactly?
Seglia was accused of fraud, basically, for filing a claim back in 2010 against Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, claiming that he had a contract with Zuckerberg from 2003 that promised him, actually at the time, he claimed he was due 84% of Facebook. He backed that up to the more modest claim of 50% later in the case. But a judge threw that case out, a judge in federal court in Buffalo, New York, threw that out last year and called the contract a fabrication and a bunch of emails purportedly between Zuckerberg, the freshman at Harvard, and Seglia back in 2003, and it called those faked. It said that Seglia had also destroyed evidence. And so Seglia is charged in federal court in Manhattan with fraud for this whole escapade.
Now, Bob, am I to understand, are you the only person who's actually interviewed Seglia at length? And if so, what exactly did he tell you?
I think I may be. In 2010, shortly after he filed his suit, I went to his home in Wellsville, New York. That's in western New York, a little ways out of Buffalo. And just went to his house, knocked on the door, and he let me in, showed me around, and we talked for a couple hours. His wife offered me a peanut butter sandwich.
nice.
What he told me at the time was that, you know, he had worked with Zuckerberg way back in 2003, and I asked him, well, you know, didn't you notice that Zuckerberg has become kind of a thing? And, that, you know, how come it just occurred to you now to make a claim? And he was involved in some legal problems where he was promising wood pellets for wood-burning stoves to people in western New York and northern Pennsylvania and not delivering. And so he claimed that, you know, once he got arrested for that, he started looking through files for something that might, you know, give him some money, some property, something. And he located this correspondence with this guy Zuckerberg.
Wow. That is amazing. Now, Seglia had a court date scheduled for this morning. Did he show up?
He did not show up. He apparently has been out of touch with his pretrial probation officer. And so they sent U.S. Marshals out to his home, and they didn't find him, but they found the ankle bracelet. So he is at large. His lawyer doesn't know where he is. And he's got a trial date in May, which the judge isn't postponing, at least for now. But we'll see what happens. Most of the time when people go missing like this, they end up, they turn up one way or the other. But we'll see.
Bob Van Voris is at Bloomberg.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Bob Van Voris. Thank you for joining us today, Bob.
Thanks so much.
All right. We've got some follow-ups for you. A big question about the Apple Watch has now been answered. TechCrunch reported this morning that the Apple Watch battery is... dun, 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 replaceable. And this means a lot, Joe Panettiere, because if it wasn't, this thing would be a piece of junk right out of the box because, of course, batteries get weaker and weaker and weaker until they're useless. And what are you going to do with a watch that you can't charge? I mean, this is great news. And what we don't know, and what people, some people are speculating, Joe, is that, you know, the real home run would be for the entire guts of the thing to be replaceable, because in three or four or five years, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be old tech, you know. And so if you can pull it out, keep the gold part, right, and over the expensive band and all the rest, and then plunk in a new component that gives you the electronics upgrade, that would be nice. Personally, I have doubts. My guess is that the battery itself is replaceable only by taking it to the Genius Bar or wherever, or to Tiffany's or wherever you got the gold version, and
right,
getting it replaced. And that will squeeze a couple more years out of it. But again, this is a small good thing from Apple.
Yeah, you know, it'll squeeze a few more years out of it, but let's look at it the other way. It may squeeze a few more dollars out of you. And what I mean by that is you can almost see the Wall Street analysts today revising their numbers and forecasts on Apple Watch, basically saying, well, how long does that battery last? And what percentage of people will go in and now upgrade the battery or replace it? And how much will that cost? So, you know, there's always the Wall Street effect with anything Apple does. Suddenly the numbers get revised. And I'm sure you're going to hear some sort of predictions about how much that battery actually costs and what it means in terms of lifetime overall spending on watch.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, in product updates, Android 5.1 Lollipop shipped worldwide yesterday. The update adds stability improvements, plus support for HD calls, multi-SIM smartphone support, and a feature called device protection, which locks the phone until the user signs in with a Google username and password. Sounds like a good, logical update, and sort of brings it up to par in some respects to the iPhone, which has, of course, activation lock, which has apparently cut the number of thefts of iPhones in London by half. So this kind of feature is a very welcome one. In product obituaries, Facebook plans to shut down FriendFeed on April 9th. In other news, FriendFeed still existed. I had no idea. FriendFeed was a popular social network when Facebook bought it in 2009 for $50 million in cash. It's hard to believe now, but that was considered a high price for an acquisition back in the day. Posts and photos will remain on the FriendFeed for only a month before being unceremoniously deleted forever. What do you think about this, Joe? Did you ever use FriendFeed?
I did not use FriendFeed. I used something called email.
Email, I've heard of that. I read about that on Facebook. Hey, one of the things that was great about FriendFeed, and probably one of the things that made it so threatening to Facebook, was that you could plug in all kinds of other social networks. They're kind of agnostic about social networks. So you could be on 12, 15 different social sites, and all of those streams would come into FriendFeed in a single place. I would love something like that nowadays. But, of course, everybody's jealously guarding the eyeballs that they've cultivated as members. And they don't want you going somewhere else. They don't want you getting information from other sites. They want you staying on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And so this is an example of that. And it's also kind of funny that Facebook's like, well, gosh, the user base was really declining. I guess we had to kill it because nobody was interested anymore. Yeah, it was declining because you bought it. And you smothered it, and you ignored it. That's why it was declining. Well, anyway, it was a cool thing while it lasted. It was kind of ahead of its time, and then it was behind its time. So, c'est la vie. In courtroom drama, the organization behind the Wikipedia called the Wikimedia Foundation and the American Civil Liberties Union are suing the NSA and the Department of Justice. The lawsuit claims that the government violated the First and Fourth Amendments to the Constitution by using so-called upstream surveillance. That's where basically you don't hack the site directly. You just hack the pipe that's coming and going from the website. And this is an interesting case. We'll see how we get. You know, this is presumably not going to be in the secret top secret court that basically approves NSA surveillance and other types of nefarious activities. This could actually have a lot of information coming to the public that
right.
Forces the government to justify why it's okay to violate, in my opinion, the Constitution because it's electronic. Why can they do it electronically and can't do it in the real world? Anyway, that's my view. Do you think they'll have any luck here, Joe, or do you think they'll just be essentially shut out by the courts?
You know, I don't know if it'll go to court, but here's the interesting thing. Imagine if five or six different companies sue the NSA for slightly different reasons, and those cases don't get rolled up into one, for instance. If those individual cases begin to chip away and share the NSA story in various court cases, suddenly you can begin to piece together the bigger NSA picture. by tracking each court case. And I do think we're going to see more court cases like this. I mean, again, I hate to harp on it, but I'll reiterate it. 2-3 weeks ago, you had that senior security advisor from Yahoo stand up and vocally attack the NSA at an NSA panel. And it just seems like there's this undercurrent of so much concern and or outright disdain for the NSA that I think you're going to see more court cases like this.
This particular suit is a constitutional issue. They're basically saying you violated the Constitution. Great. That's a great suit. But what I'm looking for are the lawsuits that count up the damages. So the NSA right. surveillance has damaged American technology companies, period. We don't know how the size of that damage, but the damage is definitely there. And I would love to see either, you know, a big lawsuit with multiple companies or individual companies filing lawsuits individually, basically saying, look, you know, yes, you have your mission to fight terrorism and crime and all the rest, but you don't get to damage the U.S. economy, the U.S. tech sector, and have all these protections. You can't have it both ways. And I would absolutely love to see that. China does a lot of hacking too, but their hacking is designed to boost Chinese companies and their you know, it's industrial espionage. I'm not suggesting that the United States should boost its industrial espionage programs, but I am saying that, you know, you have to have the national interest. You can't just have your narrow part of the national interest when you're doing these sorts of things. And this whole thing has been a big mess. And I hope they get the pantsuit off of them personally. All right. Well, in hiring, firing, and poaching news, the U.S. Senate yesterday confirmed Michelle Lee to run the 12,000-employee U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. The position had been vacant for 2 years, and Lee worked previously as Deputy General Counsel and Head of Patents and Patent Strategy at Google. She'll become the first woman ever to run the patent office. In big numbers today, we got lots of big numbers from yesterday's big Apple announcement. 700 million. That's how many iPhones Apple says they've sold since 2007. All right, another big number, 453. That's how many Apple stores the company has opened worldwide. That's an impressive number, Joe, because every single one of these Apple stores, to the best of my knowledge, is extremely profitable. So profitable that they are more profitable per square foot than any other retail outlet in history. I think that's pretty interesting that they have so many of them.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, though, is I wonder how much longer this model is going to scale. And I'll give you a prime reason why. My wife had a problem with her iPhone this past weekend, and we were trying to register for the local Genius Bar. Now they're making you share more information. Not that it's a big deal, but it's your I forget which Apple ID it was, but it was your Apple ID and some other information. And it was really clear that they're trying to keep people away from the Genius Bar at this point because there's so many darn people flooding it. And I think they're having economies of scale problems at this point.
Sounds like trying to buy batteries at Radio Shack in 1983. You got to tell them everything about yourself before you can get those batteries. 100,000, another big number. That's how many Coke machines will support Apple Pay by the end of the year. And we were joking on the live event yesterday about the fact that they, without apparently being aware of it, talked about how great it's going to be, how much money they're going to, brag about how much money they're going to make. But, you know, the Coke machines, you know, get everybody to buy Coke. And then they went into the health stuff. It's like, wait a minute. So you're going to be making money selling people Coke, and then you're going to make money helping people deal with diabetes. The results from drinking so much Coke, you know, and they get paid no matter what. So what a racket. Anyway, that's a huge number. 700,000 is a lot of retail locations that now accept Apple Pay. And again, something like 40,000, you know, all those Coke machines are lumped in that number. Those are considered retail locations. All right, another big number. This is my favorite big number today. 449. That's how many dollars Apple's Link bracelet will cost. This is the Apple Watch band. Not the watch, just the band. So pretty amazing. You know, this is in a world where you can buy a really sweet Android phone for $300. All right, 17, last big number, and the biggest, if you think about it, 17,000. That's how many dollars the most expensive Apple Watch edition will cost. That's the gold version. Joe Panettiere, I don't get the math on this one. The least expensive Apple edition watch is 10,000. The most expensive is 7,000. Is there a $7,000 band? You know, it's like it's really quite incredible how much.
Well,
that is.
You know, yeah. Well, you know, why the price tag? Because certain people can afford it. That's the simple answer.
Yeah. I can't afford that watch. I think I'll buy a Mac Pro, with a 4K display instead, something cheaper. Unbelievable. What a company that they've really got themselves into the position to make a ton of money. Well, we've got some the rest of the show coming up in just a second, but let's talk about LegalZoom. You know, if you're like a lot of people, you have dreamed of launching a business. You may have been intimidated by the whole prospect of setting it up, of doing all the legal part of it. And because, you know, partly you can, of course, get legal help from lawyers, but lawyers are extremely expensive. Well, this month, the month of March, is National Start Your Business Month at LegalZoom.com. So what kind of help can LegalZoom give you? Well, if you want to figure out what kind of business to launch, well, you know, you could do an LLC, you could do an incorporation, a nonprofit, a sole proprietorship, a general partnership, a limited partnership, limited liability partnership. Do you know the difference between these types of corporations? I kind of don't. And of course, if you go to LegalZoom, they will help you with all that information very inexpensively. There's not a lawyer sitting there looking at the clock and counting the money. This is a self-help service, so you can browse the many options there for launching your business. Okay, you're going to call your business something. You're going to name your business. Well, that's a harder challenge than it sounds. And of course, you can always use help from a lawyer, or you can do it the efficient and the right way by going to LegalZoom. You know, you have to do an availability check to make sure that the company name is available. You have to do an entity name reservation, okay, a trademark search. If you want to trademark the business name, that's a legal process, and LegalZoom can help you do it for pennies on the dollar as, you know, compared with how much it would cost if you use an expensive lawyer. So again, if you're even thinking, even dreaming about someday launching a business, go to LegalZoom.com right now and check out all the help you can get and how incredibly inexpensive it is to do everything right and to cover yourself and do your business right. And once you see how easy it is and how affordable it is, you might just launch that business. It's a great idea. Go to LegalZoom.com today to find out more. Attorney consultations are provided by independent attorneys, available in most states. Get the legal help you need from your business at LegalZoom.com. Make sure you enter the code TNT in the referral box, and you'll save even more. That's LegalZoom.com, and use promo code TNT. Legal help is here. Our TNT fan of the day is Don LeCay from British Columbia, Canada, who posted this picture on Twitter. He took it yesterday, posted it yesterday. He watched TNT and our special Apple coverage yesterday in his hotel. This kind of blows my mind, Joe. In his hotel room in Playa del Carmen. He was in Playa del Carmen. And instead of being in the shallow water on a sunny beach, he was watching us on Tech News Today. That is awesome. And by the way, his tech site is techpotato.ca. Check it out. He provides lots of help there. And we thank him so much for posting that awesome picture and for staying indoors and watching the show in Playa del Carmen. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on any social network, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you want to post it. Just make sure you use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it. So Joe Panettiere, yesterday you gave a preview plug. Today let's have the real plug. What's going on at After Nines?
Oh yeah, the real plug. This time I'll share the name. If you join us tonight at 9:01 p.m. Eastern, on afternines.com/CEO, you can tune into a podcast featuring AmpDesk CEO Alex Rowland. Now, what's interesting about Alex is he is a serial entrepreneur and he's also a digital media expert. He talks quite a bit about how he built businesses in the 1990s and the early 2000s and then how he's building them today and comparing and contrasting them, in particular in terms of how he's raised VC funding in some cases and then skipped it in others. And he explains exactly why. So join us tonight at 9:01 p.m. Eastern for that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for co-anchor today. We will see you next week.
All right, Mike. Take care.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today, and you should subscribe. One place to do it is Stitcher. You can choose in any way to subscribe on audio, on video. Take your pick at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live. It's lots of fun to watch us live. We are a news show, after all. You get the news faster if you watch live. Every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv or on the app or browser plugin of your choice. You can find those plugins and apps at twit.tv/apps. If you're ever on this part of the planet, come on in and watch us live like these two gentlemen, or three gentlemen. We have three gentlemen this morning. Always glad to have a live audience. You can also follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV and come hang out with us in our Google Plus community. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today and you'll find the community. Subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. You can follow me personally on Meerkat. No, I'm not kidding. I downloaded the app this morning. First, follow me on Twitter at Mike Elgin, and then use the Meerkat app to follow me on Meerkat. Let us know what you think. Send us an email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. That is the Tech News Today. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.